Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, you know what? This is a really good text that's being brought up, and I promise you that we will get to the Bears, but this texter is on to something. Why didn't the Let Me Put a List Together podcast team up with the I'm Fat podcast for this particular episode?
Honestly, because they would have outshined us, and I was intimidated by the I'm Fat podcast for this particular episode. Like, they just would have, we would have been shy, and the whole thing would have been, yeah, you guys are right. Yeah, you're right. Yep, they have the better fat content. Yep, their fries are better. Yeah, their Diet Coke is better. Yep, curly, yep, beef and cheddar, you're right. Yep, Kentucky Fried Chicken. So, yeah, it was an intimidation factor.
That happened on the show yesterday. We were talking about Mark Grody's podcast, Let Me Put a List Together, where they did their top 12 fast food restaurants. They included Panera, which was my big issue. I don't consider Panera fast food, but whatever. And we thought that it might be good for them to team up with the I'm Fat podcast on something like that. Rick Camp, who was a producer on this show, has ventured out and has his own podcast. It's a basketball podcast called Basketball Camp. He also continues to partner with Jay Zawoski on the I'm Fat podcast. He's one of our favorite people, and he joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you could just go to alpamonteford.com. What up, Campy?
They had Panera not only as a fast food restaurant, but in the top 12 or 10 or what? That's not great.
Well, it's not great, Bob. But what they did is they pick a number, and this week the number was 12, and it was the number 12 fast food place. Mm. But again, I don't have it in the category of fast food at all. And this is why it would have been a great team up for you guys to join them. So let me ask you something that you and Jay were discussing on the podcast a couple episodes ago. What the hell is going on with Taco Bell's menu?
You know, it's so frustrating because when a lot of places condense their menu, it's because they've done some evaluation and they see, hey, this item is not selling, so we can get rid of these ingredients that are particular to that item, and then they end up saving costs that way. That makes sense. You see it on all your Gordon Ramsay, Robert Irvine type shows about restaurants. However, Taco Bell uses the same like six ingredients for everything on the menu. So there's no excuse unless they're literally just saying, we've had to hire a bunch of people. We don't trust them to put everything together the right way, so we're simplifying. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then in one instance with Quesarito, it's not on the regular menu, but you can still order it if you order through the Taco Bell app. So if you can order it in one way, why not have it available all the time? Or if you're trying to drive people to the app, why not have a bigger cluster of menu items available only on the app, but you're just singling out the Quesarito? It doesn't make any sense to me.
I got to tell you, I don't go to Taco Bell very often, but the last time that I was at Taco Bell, I did not see the caramel apple empanada, which is one of the best dessert items in fast food, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree more. Every time I go to Taco Bell, I get the caramel apple empanada. Like, my normal order, depending on how hungry I am and if it's a meal or a snack that I'm going for, is the cheesy gordita crunch meal, where you get the cheesy gordita crunch and two hard shell tacos. And then if it's a meal, I add a second cheesy gordita crunch on top of it. But then I always get the caramel apple empanada because it's delicious. I mean, if there's no reason, if you're a fan of the McDonald's apple pie, to then not like the caramel apple empanada, which is actually an enhanced and better version of it.
I agree. You are 100% right. It's a better version of that, and it's not as scalding. They had figured out a way to not make it burn your mouth. I will say that Popeye's, their apple pie that they have is pretty good, too.
See, I haven't had that one yet, because normally I just load up on chicken and biscuits from there. That, you know, that's what I prioritize, because as I always say on the podcast, my order at Popeye's, like, I've had the chicken sandwich, and the chicken sandwich is excellent, but I don't normally order it. I normally get the number 7 spicy with fries and a Dr. Pepper drink and an extra biscuit. So I got 5 tenders, I've got the fries, which are underrated from there, and 2 biscuits. It doesn't get any better than that.
It really does not get any better than that. This texter says the caramel apple empanada is gone from Taco Bell. My wife wept. Yeah. Yeah, me and your wife are in the same boat. We feel similarly to it. Taco Bell, bring back the caramel apple empanada. I will come there once a week and buy one if you do. I make you that promise right now. Rick Camp is one of the hosts of the I'm Fat podcast with Jay Zawoski. He also has his own podcast that I would appreciate very much if you subscribe and write a review and give it 5 stars, because it's excellent basketball analysis. I was listening to your thoughts on the NBA return last night, this morning, before I was getting ready for the show. And I want to first, you're one of the people that I know that loves the association and anything that is connected with basketball. So first things first, what was that feeling like when you were able to turn the TV on and know that you were actually watching a game that kind of counts?
It was so refreshing. And the fact that I was at my mom's yesterday watching it with both of my brothers, and the three of us are just all the time, we have a text thread going of just different basketball thoughts. So to be able to watch the beginning of it with them too added the extra layer. But it was just so nice to have, you know, realize that normal-ish rotations were going to be played, and that this wasn't just a scrimmage where, you know, it's a little or Yaha and, you know, more, if you want to say street ball-ish or whatever, AAU. This was real basketball. You saw what they were doing. There was not as much of a scouting report as you would probably normally have, but it was real basketball. It was great. And the fact that it was 2 really good games just made it that much better.
What did you think of the way that Zion was deployed last night?
I understand putting him on the minutes, cool, but to not have him playing down the stretch when these games matter more to the Pelicans than they did to the Jazz, because the Pelicans are still trying to make up a deficit just to get into the play-in game against presumably Memphis, unless they just completely go downhill, but they need those games. So I understand you'd rather not have Zion sitting the entire second half from like the 9 minute mark of the third quarter until maybe the 4 minute mark of the fourth, well, then maybe you don't have him start the second half. That team played plenty this year without him. Maybe at that point you have someone else start the second half for him. He gets in the late in the third quarter when you get some of the starters coming back in, or if you want to have him playing with some of the backups, and then he comes in with a little bit less time between his times on the court at the end of the game. And there's ways that they could have done it, and maybe it was just predetermined, hey, we understand we want to win, but it's just consistency of the beginning of every quarter. Okay, I get it. And maybe that's just a sign of how much true priority the Pelicans are putting on getting into the playoffs this year, that, hey, it would be great if we were going to do it, but we're not going to risk anything possible with the long term of this franchise just to get in to probably get dusted by the Lakers in the first round.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm with you, though. I thought that they could have done it better with Zion and just said, you know, we might need him at the end. And you saw that lead just shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And then you have Rudy Gobert come through. So that was a nice moment for the NBA, too, that the guy that is kind of known for being patient zero in the NBA had the first points in the restart and had two important free throws at the beginning of the restart.
Yeah, I thought it was just a really good game for Rudy Gobert overall. When he was on the court, the defensive rating for the Jazz was 86. So that's giving up 86 points per 100 possessions. When he was off the floor, it was 140. So Rudy Gobert is, while he's not the most skilled offensive player, and the Jazz have a huge question in the offseason because he's technically supermax eligible for winning Defensive Player of the Year twice, in terms of being a deterrent, there's really nobody better at that specifically right now in the NBA, and he proved it because after he had a few, he was stifling people at the rim, the Pelicans started to get real wary of getting too close and just started settling for more floaters and mid-range jumpers, and it changed the way they played. And then just the fact that they don't have a real solid backup to him at this point as a rim protector really showed when he was off the floor, because it was just an alley to the rim, just like it was the entire game on the other side of the floor, because the Pelicans don't know what defense is, and that's going to have to be one of the big things Zion learns, because his defense was pretty atrocious yesterday.
Yeah, his defense overall is bad. What can he do to become a better defensive player?
Some of it's awareness. Like, there was an instance where the Jazz inbounded the ball from under their own basket, and he started with inside position on his guy. All his guy did was flare back out to the corner, and Zion lost track of him, and it was an easy inbounds pass for a wide-open three that went in. And then some of it's going to be footwork. Like, I think he's just relied so much on his pure athleticism that now he has to fit more technique with that. Whether it's when he gets switched on to guards and trying to move them the way the defense wants, whether it's to funnel them into more bodies or towards the sideline. He's got to learn that, especially offensively. He's really good, but yeah, that defense has a long, long way to go, especially if he's going to have the main role as kind of like what Giannis is for the Bucks defense, where he's not your on-ball guy as the big. That's what Brook Lopez does. He's the guy that's on the weak side that just uses the athleticism to come over and be a secondary rim protector, guy that cleans up the glass. That's what his role is going to be, but he just has a lot of learning to do in terms of positioning and in terms of footwork to really solidify himself that way, and just at least on that end of the floor, the best thing he does for the Pelicans' defense is the fact that he makes their offense so much better that they're able to set up by, you know, having the other team taking the ball out of the hoop instead of coming off a live rebound.
So a rotational big that can help rim protect is where he could become better.
Yeah, that's what his role is going to end up being, because I just don't know that he's ever going to be a true center. I don't know that they want him to take that kind of pounding either. So I think he'll always be put next to another big. So he'll never be that on-ball big. He'll always likely be the guy that has to read the play from the weak side. So his read and recognition defensively, and then just putting that together with the proper footwork is what's going to allow him to use that athleticism in those spots to be a true difference maker defensively.
Rick Camp is joining me here on The Score. You can check out his podcast, which is called Basketball Camp. I'm subscribed to it. We'd love it if you would subscribe to it, give it 5 stars, and write it a review. I enjoyed the hell out of the Clippers-Lakers game. I was wondering what type of level of intensity I was going to get in a game like this. And the Lakers have a really big lead in the Western Conference, and I'm using air quotes on that. So what's their magic number now? One? For them to lock up that one seed out there. But I was wondering what we were going to see, if we were going to see two teams that were just trying to settle in, or if there was going to be kind of a put-on-a-show playoff-type atmosphere in the game. And I feel like we got the latter. I felt like I was watching a game that was for stakes last night, and it was evident by watching LeBron do that thing that he does where if the game's on the line, he will switch to whoever is the biggest threat for the other team.
Yeah, when LeBron wants to, he can still lock people down. It's just he carries such a huge offensive load that he doesn't choose to do that very often. So it has to be in those small spurts. But yeah, I mean, I think of anybody that was ready for that game and ready to show that they're ready for this league to start back up, it was the referees, because that first half was awful in terms of flow, because there wasn't any of it, because there was so much foul trouble. But yeah, LeBron did his thing, but my main thought coming out of it was actually that I thought it was a real positive for the Clippers, because even though they ended up losing, they came back, they had a huge run to start the third quarter, and then in the fourth quarter to get that game back down to one possession and get it so that LeBron had to have the heroics at the end, considering no Lou Williams, no Montrezl Harrell. So that hurts their second unit. Reggie Jackson was starting at point guard because Pat Bev is working his way back. And Reggie Jackson, he just sucks out loud at this point. He doesn't understand that he's a role player at this point. He had 4 turnovers, was 3 of 10 for the field, and it was just so clear that they just need a guy like Patrick Beverley that on offense knows his role, knows he's their space, understands the spacing, and to knock down a shot and move the ball. Reggie Jackson's not that dude right now. So when everybody's healthy, Reggie Jackson might not even be in the rotation at all. So he was starting for the Clippers, and the Clippers were able to do what they did in that game. Plus, Kawhi was in a lot of foul trouble. Ivica Zubac was in the foul trouble. And not having their second unit set at all, I mean, of course, both teams are going to change. The Lakers were more ready-made to win that game, and they ended up doing it. But the way the Clippers came back was really encouraging for Clippers fans out there, like all 7 of them. They can be really happy about that. And especially if Paul George is able to shoot the way he did, especially if Danny Green can't stay with him, that could be a huge matchup decision that the Lakers will have to decide what they want to do when they get to the Western Conference Finals. Assuming we get that, because where are you going to put LeBron? Where are you going to put Anthony Davis? Because Danny Green was brought there to be a 3-and-D guy. He's hitting the threes at an okay level, but he's just slowed a little bit as he's getting older, and he was getting blown by Paul George a decent amount. So how those two star players are deployed defensively could be a real interesting thing for the Lakers, assuming we get the Western Conference Finals and why.
I know that you're going to watch every single game that is available, and there is a ton of basketball that is available today to watch. Is there any matchup that you're particularly interested in?
I'm stuck between Boston-Milwaukee and Houston-Dallas are the two marquee matchups. I'm a little more interested in Houston-Dallas because those are the two teams that everybody and their brother has pegged of if anyone can make a run out of the non-LA teams. People are saying Houston, or they're saying Dallas. So those are the two teams that I want to see. I want to see how Dallas's defense looks when Porzingis is starting at center, because their normal starter, Dwight Powell, is out for the entire restart, so they have to play a little bit smaller. Houston's not going to have Eric Gordon, but they're just a huge wild card because they're the ultimate boom-bust team. If they're hitting the threes, they have a great chance to win. And Dallas had literally the most efficient offense of all time this year. So I find that matchup really fascinating because those are two teams, two of the teams that are battling to stay out of that seven seed that Dallas is currently in. No one wants to be the seven because then they have to play the Clippers in round one. If you get the six, you're probably playing the Denver Nuggets, which is nowhere near as tough of a matchup. So Dallas is going to be playing hard from day one because they want to get out of that seven seed and they have a little work to do that. And Houston wants to stay out of it as they're currently in the sixth spot. So it's just a matter of who's going to be that team of the three through seven in the West that possibly starts out slow and slides a little bit. That's why I think those two, that game's really fascinating. And then it's just James Harden and Luka if we don't want to think too hard about it.
Campy, I saw Jay had just posted on Twitter that this episode 50 for the I'm Fat podcast, which you are half of, is live, and it's all about chicken tenders. And considering now I get to marry the two things that you love, chicken tenders and basketball, what chicken tender is good enough that you would be willing to break quarantine and be sent to quarantine for 10 days like Lou Williams for?
Well, I just had them for lunch, partially because of the conversation Jay and I had yesterday when we recorded this. I know it's not a main chain, but Fry the Coop has the best tenders I've ever had. It's really? Nashville hot chicken. Yes. It is so good. I get their medium because their dry rubs run a little spicy. So like I'm normally someone that would go for a hot. I went for their medium. It's incredibly good. You get the honey butter. You lather each tender with the honey butter. Then I dip it in some barbecue sauce, even though I don't need to. But hey, if there's more, I'll use it. So those tenders they're fantastic. Even if I have to get them DoorDash or whatever over, they're always perfectly cooked. And I've never had a bad Fry the Coop experience. And it's a high replacement level, but they're so much higher. The floor is huge, Jerry Angelo, but so is the ceiling. So if people have not had Fry the Coop, seek it out. They have a few locations. There's one, I believe, on the north side of the city, one in Oak Lawn and one in Elmhurst. So do yourself a favor and get yourself some Fry the Coop. If we're talking just national chains, then it's probably Popeyes, but I think the one that's a little underrated is Culver's. Because Culver's, you could tell, just as a principle, they care about ingredient quality across the board. And their chicken tenders are pretty fantastic.
I like their shrimp. I haven't tried their chicken tenders, but I imagine it's kind of probably similar pan code and all that good stuff. So I'll put that on the list of things that I try. Campy, as per usual, this was great. Congratulations with the success of the Basketball Camp podcast. I hear all the sponsors you got. I see that you're out here trying to make a business out of this. This is good.
I appreciate it. People participate. They listen, and they're helping us out with the sponsors, too, on Nine Fat Podcast and Basketball Camp. So I just appreciate everybody that listens and that interacts. So it doesn't feel quite as much like I'm just yelling into the ether with, my basketball thoughts or my food thoughts, for both of them. Because it's my two passions, and I'm able to talk about them all the time, and that makes me happy.
It makes me happy, too. Campy, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thanks for having me, as always.
That's Rick Camp. He hosts the Basketball Camp podcast. Go subscribe to it. Support it. The I'm Fat podcast is hilarious. Him and Jay Zawoski, I listen to that podcast whenever they upload it. I listen because the way they talk about food, it's so romantic and it's great. We need to take a break. Pete Futek is going to join me. Something that's not great is the NCAA. We'll explain why next here on The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
There's a lot of stuff, as you can imagine, going on with college football and college athletics, which is why I wanted to reach out to my man, Pete Futek. You can check him out at College Football News. He joins me now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you can check it out at alpamonteford.com. Mr. Futek, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. I'm having a badly dysfunctional relationship with the 2020 college football season and what I do. And this is weird. We both know it's not going anywhere. We both know it's not working, but we just can't let each other go. This is just a really weird time for this dumb sport.
Yeah, and the news coming out of Los Angeles is that there's like 40 cases at USC's Fraternity Row. There's all sorts of stuff that is happening around this sport. Let's talk about that first before we get to name, image, and likeness issues. Yep. We've seen a lot of conferences start to make their contingency plans. Of the contingency plans, do any of them make sense to you?
No, because they don't actually have a plan. They're going to run into the same problem baseball's falling into, except to the nth degree, because going back to your USC issue, is that what's going to happen 35 seconds after college campuses open up? House parties. And 10 minutes after that, there's going to be an outbreak on every campus. I'm under the very cynical belief that all this, yeah, we're going to open up campuses, is going to happen up until all the checks clear. And then the presidents and everyone knocked it down and said, nah, you know what, we're going online. Because they don't have it. No college has this. Forgetting football, colleges don't have this figured out. And they play upon the dreams and the hopes of all the parents and the kids who are so excited to go off to college. And this is everything you've been planning for and everything you've been working your entire, you know, lives for. And they're just going to shut it down. So because this is going to happen every time there's a gathering on these campuses, there's an outbreak. So it's not going to work. So the faster college football can get past that and be like, look, let's just cut through the hoo-ha here. College football players aren't regular students. Everyone's going to be taking classes online. If you want to have college football, you're going to have to probably not have college kids on the campus, and you're going to have to figure out how to lock them down because, as I use the Dan Bernstein line here, all it takes is one horny idiot, and your school is getting and your program's going to get shut down.
Why are people so against the idea of spring ball?
It doesn't feel right. It just does. It seems a little off. You know, it's college football is a fall sport. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense from a logistical standpoint. Then it just seems like you're really just kind of shoehorning it in. I would actually kind of be a bigger fan of saying, you know what, let's reset this.
figure it out, get it right for 2021, because we might not have that much of a change between now and then, and figure out a better plan. By then, we have better testing, hopefully. And those are the two big – forget the vaccine side of things. If that comes through, great. It really is going to come down to, can you get to this point where, okay, you spit in a cup, swish it around, okay, it turns blue, okay, you're fine, get on the field. You know, it's got to be a fast, easy test where we know all the players on the field are healthy or as close to as healthy as possible. And secondly, and I've said this before, but not to get political, the other game changer is who wins the election. You know, it's if Biden wins, all of a sudden there's a whole new slew of rules and guidelines and things that might be better or might just be like, hey, we're just not doing this at all. But that's the one difference maker in the spring that's not there right now in the fall.
It just seems like every like the idea that the SEC is like, oh, well, you know what? We'll move it back to the end of September. When everyone is supposedly not supposed to be doing things in the fall because it's supposed to get worse. So I keep being confused on how it is that they think that they're going to be able to get all of this stuff done.
If nothing else, I think it's the smarter move, only because they need better guidelines. And I've hammered and ripped on the athletic directors and the presidents and stuff, not having a real set plan or guideline until now. And honestly, I have no idea. This whole idea of, well, you can't put college football in a bubble. Yeah, you can. You're college football. They have no players union. You can use your iron fist authoritarian rule and say, look, son, you want to play college football, you're kind of going 1980s Soviet hockey style and sitting in this, you know, dorm room for the next 3 months, and you're taking your classes and you're playing football. If you don't like it, okay, you know, that's fine. You don't have to. You keep your scholarship. Everything's cool. But if you want to play, this is how it is. You can't really do that in the NFL or other sports. But for the SEC, it makes sense because they need something else to work. They need that. It's almost a positive that baseball is having the problems it's having because now they know, okay, doesn't work. You can't do that. The bubble in the NBA so far works. So maybe there's something that over the next 4 weeks or so that comes through, or maybe the NFL comes up with guidelines or something different to get themselves going that just makes it a little bit easier that the SEC can then use that and safely figure out how to get these guys to play. Because right now, to put a bunch of kids on a college campus and say, hey, we're all systems go for August 29th, that's a bit of a push unless the teams and the players are able to lock themselves down. And again, you're just one guy away from screwing that all up.
And meanwhile, the Buffalo Bills sent 5 rookies home because they tested positive for coronavirus. Anyway, all right, let me talk about one of the other big issues in college sports, and that was, and you predicted this, and we talked about a month ago, you were like, hey, Notre Dame's going to have to kind of join the ACC. How did that end up taking place?
Yeah, it's my line continues to be that's the friends with benefits relationship, but now they get a drawer and a spot in the medicine cabinet. So they needed this. The ACC needed them. It's a one-time deal. It's a pretty sweet deal for both sides. So Notre Dame's still Notre Dame. It still gets to do what it gets to do, but they have to split that NBC money. So their money's going to get split 15 ways, all the TV revenue across all the different teams. But the Notre Dame now can play for the ACC championship. It can play in the Orange Bowl if, say, Clemson goes to the college football playoff. So it's a pretty good deal for Notre Dame. They've got locked in the 10 ACC games. They can still probably keep the Navy game if they want it. So it's a pretty good deal for both sides. And then they can just opt out as of next year. But it's going to be interesting because I think both sides are, you know, what's going to happen out of this season if it goes on is you're going to see maybe Notre Dame and ACC like, yeah, we kind of like this deal. We're going to kind of keep going on with this sort of as is. And I think the other probably byproduct of this for the other Power 5 conferences might just be that, yeah, you know, we kind of like keeping all the money here to ourselves and we kind of like this deal. You all group of 5 programs, thank you very much for playing, but nah, we're good.
Okay, let's talk about the more complicated issue, and that's the name, image, and likeness. And we got a glimpse into what the NCAA thinks about what type of guardrails and guidelines should be put in. I know that you've done the work on this on a lot of different fronts. I have no respect for the NCAA. I really don't, and I feel like they are a useless organization that really only can survive if they are taking things away from student athletes. How did you read their approach to Congress on name, image, and likeness?
The biggest issue in all of this, and this includes playing on the field this year, it includes testing protocols, this includes everything, is, and it's the one massive difference between trying to figure out college football and the pro sports, there is no players union. There is no representation. There isn't anybody at that table or who's going to be looking out for the players' rights in any sort of way. So the players have to rely on the NCAA and the adults to kind of do them a little bit of a solid here, and that's never going to happen. So the NCAA is always going to be the NCAA. The long and short of it is the NCAA is trying to make sure that, okay, players, you can do the name, image, and likeness thing as long as it doesn't conflict with what we want, whether it be other deals, like if they have a sweet deal with Nike and you want to do a Reebok deal or something, or Adidas deal or something, or if you want to deal with a gambling outfit, or if your name, image, and likeness results in some, you know, Jim Bob Booster wanting to give you a bag of cash. If as long as, you know, the NCAA approves of the name, image, and likeness side of things, it's going to be cool. If it doesn't, it's going to say no. And what it's trying to do is protect itself from the players saying, hey, look, why can't I do this deal? And why, NCAA, are you using my name, image, and likeness for, let's say, a video game, and I'm not profiting off of this? And the players have absolutely no representation whatsoever on this. To me, the other problem here continues to be that the NFL has its ridiculous rule that you have to be 3 years out of high school before you can turn pro. So now you're stuck. It's not like college basketball players who could go. There are other options to go play if you don't want to go the college basketball route. It's not even a one-and-done thing. But you have to stay around for 3 years. And, yeah, I get it. Players aren't maybe physically mature yet. The NFL doesn't want to deal with it. They certainly don't want to give up that easy training ground that the NFL, the college football is, to be able to sort out who's actually good and who's not. But it stinks that Trevor Lawrence can't turn pro early, or Justin Fields can't turn pro early. So for the vast majority of players, all right, at the end of the day, you know, look, college is expensive. You are getting your scholarship, room and board. It might not be 100% fair, but at least you're getting something out of the deal because you're not going to be going pro anyway. But for the real superstars, either you got to do what Virginia Tech corner Caleb Farley did and say, look, I'm just not playing this year. I'm preserving myself in the NFL to be the first-round draft pick, and you just sit out. Or you should be able. There should be a way that they could go into an NFL world earlier and get paid to do what they do, because they don't want to, you know, necessarily be a college student. They want to go play NFL football, and they don't have the rights to do that right now.
Pete, as always, I appreciate it. What's something that you expect to happen in the next 7 days?
The Big Ten's going to be the big key here. I still think there's going to be college football played somewhere. I'm wavering on if the Big Ten thinks it's got it. I think they were really spooked by the Rutgers situation, where a whole slew of players, whole slew of students got an outbreak. I think the Big Ten's sort of going to either kick the can to October or just shut it down altogether, because this is where training camps are supposed to start. And I think the Big Ten, more than just about anybody else right now, is freaked out that the second that they open up camps, there becomes an outbreak, and then forget it all gets shut down.
Yeah, and they're very – people probably don't want to believe this, but they're very much aligned with the Ivy. Like, they have a big relationship that goes beyond the football with the Ivy. I think the Ivy was right about college basketball, and I think they're right about college football. We'll see if the Big Ten ends up following their lead.
Yeah,
Pete, thanks for your time.
Real quick, one big difference, Ivy League doesn't make money off of football. Big Ten does. But you are dead on right. And the other thing really quick to remember is that the Big Ten is the biggest conference. It is the biggest reach, biggest fan base, biggest money, even bigger than the SEC. So where they go, that's going to be the lead dog for everybody else.
Thank you, sir.
Later, Mr. Lawrence.
That is Pete Futek, College Football News. You should check it out, collegefootballnews.com. And if you're like, hey, how do you spell Futek? FIU, like Florida International University, TAK. Futek. He's a good man and thorough. We need to take a break. There's some baseball news. The White Sox have a lineup, and there's something I want you to keep in mind this weekend while you're watching baseball. Back after this on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
So Eduardo Rodriguez was supposed to be the opening day starter for the Boston Red Sox. He got COVID and tested negative. The virus has gone through his system. This guy's 27 years old. What they found out is that when they had him go out there and pitch again, he threw 20 pitches and then said he felt like he was 100 years old after that. He now has developed myocarditis, inflammation inside his heart. It's a common thing. It's a disease that people live with. But it is something that ended up happening to him as a side effect of having coronavirus. And now they're not sure if he's going to be able to play. It looks like he's not going to be a starter until he can kind of regain some of his wind. But it's to let you know that, look, people want to make this binary. Like, either you don't get COVID and you live, or you get COVID and you die. And I saw this morning that there is more analysis. I haven't read it yet, or else I would pass it along to you, about what some of the side effects are for people who survive COVID and then they end up in a situation like this. It makes me terribly sad for this young man who wanted to play, and he is 27 years old. So the idea of a healthy athlete will be totally fine, I think, is a very callous and simplistic way to look at this. Just keep his name in mind, Eduardo Rodriguez. My hope is that he recovers from this and that he gets an opportunity to still pitch for the Red Sox. But it just makes me terribly sad that this is something that he is going through right now. That he was so exhausted after throwing 20 pitches in a bullpen session that they were like, we have to shut him down. The White Sox have made a roster move, and now there is a lineup to go along with it. Nick Madrigal is going to be in the lineup tonight for the White Sox. He is going to bat ninth and play second. So now you have an idea of what the things that he learned. Schomburg, he's ready to go. And now there's a spot for Nick Madrigal. Steve Stone said that he thinks that the White Sox got smarter as a team. Let me read his exact tweet. Nick Madrigal will start at second tonight and hit ninth. The team just got a touch smarter. Nick's baseball acumen is off the charts. Don't expect Whit Merrifield right off the bat. Give Nick some time to adjust. He's young. Sox defense just got better. TA and Nick for a while. You know how I love Stoney. I am concerned that he can't hit. I know that he's smart, and I know that the comp is Dustin Pedroia. I am concerned that while he might make a lot of contact, I'm concerned that that contact is weak contact. But we'll see, and I will give him time. I haven't gotten my text from Shep about the McNeil and Parkins show. Yep, now I got it. Joe Ostrowski is going to talk with the McNeil and Parkins show about some of the betting stuff. And I know that people who are dealing with it right now, like I've had people text me, like they've got concerns about it. The aforementioned Steve Stone will be on at 4 o'clock. Jed Hoyer will join them at 4:30. We've got Cubs pregame at 6:15. So there's a lot of fun stuff that's happening on the Score today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support of this radio show and all the other stuff that I do. I'll be hosting The Rush for NBC Sports Chicago tonight at 5 with Steve Conroy as we talk some hockey. Blackhawks are back tomorrow. We'll discuss it all on Monday. See you then.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.